The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. The group of death begins. Just how will three of the European giants qualify from a group where only three teams can qualify? Advantage France then after a 1-0 win over Germany. Things we discovered. Mbappe is fast. Pogba is good. Kante is everywhere. There's a chance for Barry to get on his high horse. Some biting or nibbling and a wayward parachutist. Meanwhile, Cristiano Ronaldo scoring goals, setting records, sending the value of Coca-Cola shares tumbling. The Portuguese only just squeezed past Hungary 3-0. Elsewhere, now every team has played once. What have we learned? Is it too early to plot where England should try to finish yet in their group? Barry's already told some brilliant anecdotes that won't make the edit. You've asked some questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barry Glendening. Hello.
Hello, Max. I saved a man's life.
Well, I'd love to learn about that one day. Philippe Auclair, nice to see you. How are you?
Very nice to see you, Max. Did you know that Barry saved a man's life once?
I'd never heard it. Simon Burnton, welcome to the Euros Football Weekly Daily Pods.
Thank you very much.
How's the Euros been?
Well, I spent the first 3 days of it in Birmingham watching cricket.
Right.
So I'm easing myself into it, having missed a chunk.
Oh, well, welcome anyway. And you've started then. Simon, I think tonight, France-Germany, I saw some people saying that this was a bad game or the quality was poor, but I tended to think this was sort of triple the pace of any of the other games we've seen so far, Barry.
I wouldn't go that far. I thought it was a good game. I really enjoyed it. Thought it could have gone either way and France were probably the fair winners in the end. But if I was a footballer in the German team, I would be disappointed. I think they should have and could have turned it around and they should have probably won it in the end. Philippe may well disagree with me.
I mean, I disagree with you quite a lot. So I don't know what you think, Philippe.
Well, if you're asking me, I enjoyed the game, but I was disappointed in both teams at the same time. As in, I was disappointed to see France being so timid. I know that it is Didier Deschamps' game plan is to control things, and that one of the things he's managed to do with this group of players is to give them a measure of control and to be able to ride over any difficult moments, which they did. But I know, looking at my notes, I can see things like Griezmann is at right back. I can see things such as fantastic defending by Benzema and so on. And some of the performances on the French side were very good, and some of them I think were near exceptional. I think Raphael Varane had an absolutely magnificent game, absolutely magnificent. N'Golo Kanté was N'Golo Kanté. Paul Pogba had a strange mixed game, doing some wonderful things and some not so clever things. Mbappe as well had a very mixed game, but that's what I was expecting. He's not. I don't think this boy is quite well in his head at the moment, and did some absolutely fantastic things, but also wrong choices. But they did control the game more or less, and I have to say I'm surprised by the lack of creativity on the German side. There's tons of talent in the German side, and there were some wonderful movements from time to time, particularly in the first half. But there is a lack of penetration in midfield. I mean, come on, Max. France played what, the last 40 minutes in their 30 yards, and did you see them really in any danger at any point?
Only when sort of Sané got in between the lines, and then nothing really happened from it. I just thought the game was quicker than anything I'd seen so far, and I thought that France, you know, created more. Germany could have scored, but didn't really. Lloris didn't really have much to do, did he? And, you know, but for slightly, you know, but for being onside, you know, then you know, Rabiot hit the post as well and Hummels did that brilliant tackle. I thought France could have won this more comfortably. Simon, what did you think of it?
Firstly, it was a really shonky goal. As own goals go, this is the third we've seen already in this tournament. And the least blameless, I would say. I think thought that there was plenty of time for Hummels to orient his body and his foot to put the ball somewhere better than he did. And He shinned it into the back of the net. And I think that that was poor. It was a poor goal. So for all France's better attacking, there were two offside goals and an own goal. And not a huge amount of chances beyond those. France had the better of the first half. Germany, much the better of the second in terms of possession, territorial and of the ball. But as Philippe says, not a lot of chances. France always so dangerous on the break with that pacey chap up front. And I found them a lot more convincing as a unit. Philippe's right to say that a lot of their, that it was their defending that really impressed. Griezmann defended, he contributed a lot more in defence somehow than in attack. Rabiot defended well. The back four, obviously, Kante. They were very convincing defensive, very solid defensive presence, and they're terrifying on the break. Didn't quite nail it this time, but I don't think they're going to mess this up.
Paul Pogba's pass before the goal was beautiful. James tweeted, the sort of pass that makes you yell at your TV wondering what the hell Paul Pogba has done. Then you sit down very quietly and say, well done. It was Barry, it was lovely, wasn't it?
Well, I described it to you on Twitter. It drifted. It just seemed to drift towards its target. Hernandez, who just smashed the ball across the face of goal, and it went in off Hummels. But then, yeah, I got weird feedback from that on Twitter, people saying, oh, well, anyone could have done that. I'm going, yeah, I'm not so sure they could.
And also on social media, a sort of culture war begins between Manchester United fans, or people saying, why didn't he do that pass to Luke Shaw instead 4 months ago?
But there was no German player in that entire half of the field. It was a beautifully flighted pass, but yeah, a really badly flighted pass would have accomplished much the same thing.
he wasted it, did he?
I mean, it made the what would otherwise have been an ugly goal beautiful. But it didn't. It was an easy pass. It was a hard version of an easy pass.
I spent quite a lot of the time, Philippe, watching that game thinking, it must be very strange for Hugo Lloris to play in front of a back four that's really good. And not the camera not cutting to him looking miffed.
Yes. Yes. To be honest, I think he's got used to that, you know. I think in a way that many French players say that when they go back with Les Bleus, it's a bit like a holiday. Because they have such belief in each other that they're all so relaxed. I mean, that's the one thing you will have seen is that they're very relaxed with each other, and that, I mean, they are, in terms of in defensive terms, they're incredibly focused, they're incredibly together, they hunt in packs, they're incredibly well drilled. But again, I cannot help but being a little bit disappointed with what they propose, because they can do so much more. And there was one great moment, I think in the second half, when Didier Deschamps was in the shot, and the camera was close enough for us to hear what he was telling his players. And he said this thing, which is typical Didier Deschamps. He said, "Boys, let's attack, but not too much." I thought, this is the Didier Deschamps philosophy has just been summed up. We absolutely remarkable. And that's what they did. They attacked, but not too much. You will have seen as well that N'Golo Kanté, the reason why France were actually probably much more active and proactive in the first half, you could see N'Golo Kanté was much further forward on the field. He was in the kind of space that you would expect him to be with Chelsea, almost, on the right wing in particular. Second half, no, he was content just to sit in front of the back four with Rabiot. And because of that, there was no real drive from midfield, but there didn't need to be. I mean, it's a tournament that, and Deschamps is a master at tournaments. He's planning his way. He's thinking of the 11th of July already. And it's a very unusual mindset to be in. I can tell you, for a Frenchman, that for a very long time, we were not like that. But it seems to me, you know what? I'm thinking about 2014 against the Germans, you know, Benzema's last game in a major tournament before tonight. Who scored the German goal? Mats Hummels from a corner kick. And it was a bit like that, but reversed. As in, against the Germans in Brazil, we conceded a goal and we found it impossible to go past their defense. They were completely in control. They never went out of second or third gear. And it was the same. France didn't have to go out of second or third gear to defend themselves against, again, a disappointing German team.
Most of the correspondence we've had about Germany has been about Toni Kroos, actually, and sort of what he does, which was a bit harsh. But, you know, Marcus, apart from slowing the game down, what does he do? Mitchell, what does he actually do? Barely breaks out of a walk, plays every pass sideways, no urgency to win back the ball when he loses it. What am I missing?
Well, you could imagine, for example, Emre Can would be a player who could fit quite easily in this role, perhaps more naturally than either Kroos or Gundogan. I mean, Can has played as a defensive midfielder quite regularly. And also, Toni Kroos, I mean, the way you think about him is the set-piece quality of delivery, which wasn't there tonight. It was quite shocking, the German quality of the on the set pieces.
Although there was a good free kick where Toni Kroos was taking it and Thomas Müller looked like he might take it and then just sprinted towards the wall as fast as he could, which looked quite terrifying. It didn't really achieve a whole lot. What did you make of Germany, Simon?
I worry that this has a little bit of 2018 about it for them. When they started with a 1-0 defeat, won their second game and then lost to South Korea in the third. They played Portugal next, Hungary in the last game. And if the ambition is to get to 4 points, they're now walking a tightrope. I wasn't sure what their plan was in attack. I'm not sure that they had moments of brightness, but how was the goal coming? There was one fabulous cross from Kimmich in the second half, well defended at the back post by Pavard. Beyond that, I'm just not convinced by them. I'm not sure that they have an attacking identity.
Yeah, Gnabry had that chance that went over. On that cross from Kimmich and Pavard, this is a chance, Barry, for you to get on your high horse. You know, Gosens comes through sort of knee height into his head and isn't even booked. I mean, it looked like a very dangerous challenge to me, and almost people get away with it because of he's attacking the ball to try and score. And also, Pavard looked pretty much knocked out and then played on.
Yeah, well, I don't think he should have played on, but I'm not sure. I don't know what the UEFA protocol is, but anyone who is suffering from a head injury should be taken off. And I mean, we've already had the obvious thing the other night with Christian Eriksen. You cannot be too careful in these games.
The other sort of less serious but slightly curious moment, Philippe, was Antonio Rudiger nibbling the back of Paul Pogba and I think squeezing his nipples at the same time.
That's
quite an evening for someone.
Well, yeah. Yes, intimate moments from the back. But there was definitely a nibble there. And it was almost playful, though, wasn't it?
I don't know what the rules are for a playful nibble. I mean, I think it's got to be consensual.
Yes, you do.
Doesn't it have to be? Surely it has to be consensual.
Yes, it certainly was not consensual in this part. But I think Pogba's reaction was quite remarkable in that. Should he get in trouble for that, actually, Rüdiger, if UEFA has a look at it? And things, because it escaped the referee's attention, obviously, at the time. Just wondering if they can review the...
I think so. I think even a light bite is not acceptable. I don't...
Yeah.
Simon?
I wasn't sure that there was a closure of the jaw. I think that there was a scrape of the teeth of his upper jaw.
Right.
But I don't think that there was a closure there. I don't think that there was a chomping motion.
And is that where the line is for you?
For me, there needs to be an element of chomp.
Right.
Yeah. So I think maybe he gets away with this one.
Fair enough.
Well, I thought was strange, particularly given Pavard's injury, was that France basically didn't use substitutions at all. They made their first change in the 89th minute, their second in the 65th minute of stoppage time. They've got five substitutions to make. Seems strange to me.
I think you'll see the rotation in the next game against Hungary, pretty obviously. I think that we'll see some players we haven't seen yet. But
they're allowed to do that because they won.
Yes, exactly.
We should mention the moment when Mbappe ran through and basically made Mats Hummels think, you know, this is getting a bit quick for me, this level. I mean, the recovering tackle, and I couldn't... I thought he got the player before the ball, actually. I think it could have been a penalty. But that pace is just... Well, it's something quite joyous to see, isn't it? And what did you make of Benzema coming back in, Simon?
I thought he used the ball intelligently. He was often the one playing the ball through for Mbappe. Obviously, Mbappe is their great attacking threat. He's always their out ball. But I thought Benzema did his job excellently well as a centre forward. He was there to support Mbappe when Mbappe made runs down the flanks. His controlled the ball well, used it well. Yeah, thumbs up.
Thomas says, what national anthem stirs the emotions the most? For me, Clive, it's got to be the German one. I mean, I think the French is great. I've got to say that on the 20th of June, so Sunday, Italy-Wales, if the game is half as good as the Italy anthem followed by the Welsh anthem, then we're in for an absolute treat. We should also mention the Greenpeace protester who narrowly avoided disaster after parachuting into the stadium after colliding with the spider cam. I mean, it looked like it could have been incredibly serious because he swerved into the crowd and he missed it by just sort of a matter of inches. I think something from the spider cam or something fell down quite near. I think it was near Didier Deschamps.
But it kind of reminded me of the time years ago at Christmas at Villa Park. An ex-soldier, I think an ex-SAS guy, parachuted into Villa Park, dressed as Santa Claus, and he bashed into the top of one of the stands. And he ended up losing a leg, actually. He bashed into the Trinity Road stand at Villa Park. But, yeah, probably not a brilliant idea.
Simon, you said you interviewed him.
I did. I think he married his nurse, the nurse who looked after him during his rehabilitation. But I'm very much on the don't really see the point of parachuting into football stadiums camp. And I'm not really sure how much positive publicity Greenpeace did to gain from it. And it really looked like it was quite close to being a terribly, genuinely bad thing. So I'm all in favour of Greenpeace as an organisation, but perhaps do something different next time.
All right, that'll do for part one. Part two, we will discuss Cristiano Ronaldo setting new records as Portugal beat Hungary. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. A reminder, you can vote. After all the praise that we got, Barry, if people want to put their praise where their mouth is, does that make sense? Or is that what Antonio Rudiger does? You can vote for Football Weekly in the Listener's Choice Award at the British Podcast Awards. Just go to britishpodcastawards.com/vote, then type in Football Weekly, it'll appear, and then vote for us. Will you do that, Philippe?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, thanks so
and,
much.
And can I use multiple email addresses as well?
No, I don't know if you can. Okay. We only want honest... And I mean, if somebody can bother to sit in a cafe and do it a million times, that's fine. We won't say that you've done that. Right, Hungary 0, Portugal 3. We have to start with Ronaldo. After he scored his first, Richard Jolly's stat, Cristiano Ronaldo has scored in more European championships than Poland. He's scored in 5 tournaments. Poland have scored in 4. The first player to get to 11. Platini's on 9. Shearer 7. Griezmann 6. And Van Nistelrooy 6. His 105th and 106th goals for Portugal in 175 games. He's just 3 off Ali Day's all-time international goal scoring record. Before the second goal in the script, I wrote, but Ronaldo was bad. Is Ronaldo a problem for Portugal?
I thought that, firstly, the scoreline massively, massively misrepresents the game. That for 84 minutes, Portugal couldn't break through. There was one great chance in the first half, but they scored in the 84th minute through a deflected cross that led to a deflected shot. And then 2 minutes later, Renato Sanches, the substitute, goes on a run in which he lost the ball four or five times. It felt like he was constantly losing the ball and then kind of righting himself, thinking, where's the ball? Oh, it's still at my feet. It's bounced back right to my feet. I'll keep going. And just the ball was bouncing favourably for him all the way down the pitch from about the halfway line to the edge of the penalty area. And then it was a dive. The contact absolutely initiated by the forward. And that is the game massively swung. Two goals in about 2 minutes. Both the setup of the first goal, the execution of the first goal, the setup of the second goal, the winning of the penalty. It was extremely lucky. They, boy, did they get the rub of the green there. And if Portugal hadn't won that game, there's very little jeopardy in this group stage when most groups have three teams going through to the knockout stages. But if Portugal didn't beat Hungary in their first game, when you need 4 points to be sure of going through, you know, then they're on the verge of elimination after one game. They are so lucky to be in the position they're in now of needing one draw. So well, lucky.
Not a great 2 minutes for Willy Orban, who I checked to see if he was Victor's son, but he isn't. And that's probably a bit harsh on Willy. But what did you make of it, Philippe?
Of Hungary, of the game in general. Yeah, first of all, I'll add one stat which I've seen going past for Ronaldo, which I think is perhaps the most astonishing of them all. Since he turned 30 years old, he's played 48 games for Portugal and he scored 49 goals. 49 in 48 after the age of 30. That is quite good. It is insane. And he was not very good at all. And he scored a penalty. He's good at scoring penalty. He's as good as other people are scoring penalties. He's not particularly brilliant at scoring penalties. He's not as good as Olivier Giroud at scoring penalties, for example, or Bruno Fernandes. But he will take the penalties because nobody else can take the penalties. But on the other hand, the third goal was rather a thing of beauty, even if it must say that the Hungarians simply had given up the ghost. And because I agree with Simon, I thought that it was the scoreline flatters Portugal incredibly. And the one thing, Max, is that I think we were expecting Hungary to be, especially in front of 62,000 spectators who were very raucous, to say the least. We were expecting them to be very difficult to beat. They're very well organized defensively. I mean, Rossi has done a fantastic job since taking them over. They've got an excellent keeper. He showed it again today. So we thought, yeah, they're going to be hard to beat. But I was perhaps not expecting to see them do what they did in the second half. I mean, they seemed to grow. They were actually, I thought, the more likely to score at one point in the game before Portugal opened the scoring.
I thought they'd managed the game so beautifully up to that point. You know, they were very quiet in the first half, but defensively, yeah, Brilliantly organised and resolute. And then in the second half, as Portugal perhaps faded slightly, they started to go on the front foot. And there was potential there for them. They scored a goal that was disallowed for a fairly obvious offside. I watch the group stages. Like I say, there's very little jeopardy left. But I want to see big teams lose. I want to see expectations shattered. I want to see the small boys overcome the big guys. And I was starting to get really good vibes about this game, and it didn't quite happen.
It's nice to have a Hungarian team which is actually pulling its weight on the international scene, even without their best player, which we shouldn't forget, by the way, that they've lost their very best player just before the tournament, Szoboszlai. So, which is a bit like, imagine I mean, imagine any other European team suddenly missing its main creator, main striker, wrapped into one. That's what they've done. And they were admirable in so many ways. Today, which perhaps other aspects of football in their country is not. But Portugal were lucky. I mean, they were lucky, Max. And for Cristiano, the way he is, I mean, at the moment, we've got to forget that he was the Cristiano Ronaldo that we knew and loved or didn't love, but admired, certainly. He's become a kind of Pippo Inzaghi. So, and I always hated having Pippo Inzaghi in a team. What is he doing? He scores goals. That's what he does. And he does it better than anybody else. What can you say about that?
Well, he also has complete control over the valuation of billion-dollar companies, Ronaldo, because Jacob mentioned at the end of the pod yesterday that he moved two bottles of Coca-Cola away from him and then just said water. Lots of people reporting this in The Athletic. It said he managed to wipe around $4 billion off the market value of Coca-Cola shares on Monday. Between the start and the end of the press conference, there was a 1.6% drop in share price. It has rebounded a bit. Coca-Cola responded to the initial comments by saying everyone is entitled to their drink preferences and that everyone has different tastes and needs. A spokesperson added, players are offered water alongside Coca-Cola and Coca-Cola Zero Sugar on arrival at our press conferences. Philippe.
Yes, no, this reminded me of the only time I saw a manager do a press conference while drinking red wine. And could you guess which manager it was?
Big Sam.
No, it was not Big Sam.
Sir Alex.
It was not Sir Alex. It was an Italian manager. And somebody who is known for his love of good food and good wine.
Ancelotti.
It was Carlo Ancelotti at Chelsea. Yeah. And he asked the reporters who were there, can I have a glass of wine, please, for his press conference? And somebody at the time, Chelsea, was still serving wines before one of our colleagues disgraced himself in one particular occasion. And we brought him a glass of red wine, and he sipped it, and he said, that's shit. And he put the glass away and carried on with his press conference. Carlo.
Anyway, right, that'll do. For part two. Part three, we'll do any other business. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Now everyone's played once. Does anyone have any searing insights, what we've learnt, where England should try and finish in the group? The one thing that I noticed was that... why are you laughing, Barry? The hubris.
Oh, I love it.
You know I don't really mean it. I did. It was interesting. I did. When I was watching Portugal, I during the tournament, I'm watching the big sides and thinking, we could beat this lot. And then when France and Germany were playing, I was like, if they play at this pace, maybe we can't beat this lot.
My searing insight is, and I wasn't on the pod after the England game, I thought England played quite well. But I don't think they played as well as everyone says they did. And I thought they were up against incredibly poor opposition. That's my searing insight. I don't know what you English boys make of that.
I think you're probably about right. I thought there were lots of positives. And since England have never won the opening game of a European Championships, I think you take the win.
I'm nitpicking as I am duty bound to do. But I didn't think... You were all that.
Even though we have absolutely no idea how these groups will end up looking like, if England finishes first, they'll play against probably Portugal or Germany, right? That's the way it's looking at the moment. If they finish second, they would play against Group E, correct?
Second in Group E, yeah.
Yeah, second in Group E. So that's pretty cool. So
Sweden or Slovakia type thing.
Sweden or Slovakia. And if they finish third and one of the best thirds, they would probably get Belgium. Is that correct? Yes, winner of Group B.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not great, is it?
Did you see what Bonucci was saying today?
What was he saying?
So Bonucci asked about his opinion of the tournament so far. At Italy's press conference today, said, besides the teams that are still to play, England have really stood out to me. For the approach they showed, the way they were willing to work hard for one another, and the fact they sought 3 points. England are the team that have impressed me the most so far.
There we are.
Yeah, but what's he won, Simon? What's he won? What does he know?
The one thing I think is interesting has been the refereeing, or the lack of a VAR controversy. Not one kind of the lines on an offside. I know we don't get to see them. We saw them, I think, on today's game with Mbappe. Or just not one utterly ludicrous, we're waiting for 10 minutes. And the ref seems to be letting the game flow. Yep. A few people have got in touch to say that. I don't know if that's a directive.
They have an offside VAR, an offside specific video assistant referee for this tournament. So rather than just having a single video assistant referee, they have a main one, an assistant one, and an offside specific one. I don't know if that is one of the things that's helping to speed the process up, but you're absolutely right. It's been very unobtrusive so far, having ruined so many Premier League games. And generally, the standard refereeing has been good, and also the kind of take-no-bullshit attitude of quite a lot of the referees. They've asserted themselves well, like not in a showy way, not in a look at me, I've got some great colourful cards that I'm going to flourish. But just, they've bossed games well. So that has been I cannot remember ever, after a round of an international tournament, thinking that praising the referees would be one of the key points.
Yeah, no, I was going to say as well, the way that the handball law has evolved makes that some of the decisions which could have been a little bit contentious, we haven't had to take them. And by and large, we've ignored all these accidental handballs and so forth, which everybody's happy about.
What I do think is the rule where if a defender touches a through ball towards an offside player, then it becomes a new phase of play and therefore not offside. That is one of my least favourite rules in all of football. And Belgium scored a goal profiting from that. And no one whispered anything about it. It was pure nonsense. Lukaku was a million gazillion light years offside. And for that to be a good goal under offside rules is ludicrous and must stop now.
Okay. An update on Christian Eriksen. He put a post on his Instagram saying, "I'm fine. Under the circumstances, I still have to go through some examinations at the hospital, but I feel okay. Now I'll cheer on the boys on the Denmark team in the next matches. Play for all of Denmark. Best, Christian." And he's in his hospital bed smiling with a thumbs up. It is a wonderful thing to see. Frank says, totally unrelated, but I remember Philippe saying he taught philosophy in a previous pod. As a philosophy student myself, I was interested if he has a favourite philosopher or philosophers. I can imagine him sitting outside a bar on the left bank smoking a Gaulois.
I think it's smoking a Gaulois, because smoking a Gaulois has quite a different meaning, my dear Max.
tell me what I just said. What did I just say?
I think people can make up their own mind. That's what it means. But yes,
that's what I like to do.
Okay, all right.
Night.
And I did live on the left bank. And I've spent some time in cafes, in literary cafes at the terraces, and I have smoked Gauloises at cafes. And as far as my favorite philosopher is probably Spinoza is the one that I would.
Okay. What's Spinoza's theory? What's his big idea?
Listen, it took me 8 years to. to get to grips with Spinoza. So I'm not going to explain it in the last 30 seconds of the Guardian Football Weekly.
Okay, that's perfectly acceptable.
I reckon you're more of a Gitan man.
I was more of a Gitan man, but I smoked Gauloises Sans Filtre, the Maryland, the green packet, which was really great. But the pack of Gitan, to be honest, aesthetically speaking, is much superior to any other pack of cigarettes ever designed.
It exposes my own ignorance, but I give Barry far too much credit that I presumed Gitan was another philosopher for a bit, but no, it's a cigarette. Anyway.
That's the name, by the way, Raymond Goethals, the manager of Marseille, was very famous for mixing up his players' names, and that's how he called Zinedine Zidane. He called him Zinedine Gitan.
Works, but if it works...
Well, Zidane smokes, so there you go. Maybe he wasn't so wrong.
Rob, a couple of people got in touch about Ewan Murray broadcasting from a jazz club. Rob, the Ewan Murray background music really added something. Please continue in the future. MBS Screens thanks Max for addressing where that music was coming from in part one today. I was looking around my office trying to find the source, he says. On Barry's story being edited out repeatedly, Bear Swift, amongst others, going, is this the greatest podcast edit of all time? And we finish with an email from Neil. Not necessarily connected to anything. Dear Football Weekly Pod, I've wanted to tell you about this for some time, but haven't done, what with the word limit on tweets. So was glad to see that you've set up an email account, presumably for stories such as this. A while ago, Barry told us a tale when he was stumbling around putting on his boxers next to an open window with near hilarious tragic consequences. I have a similar story to tell. A friend of mine lives in a small coastal village in Yorkshire. He told me that one night, after a fair few ales, he went to a party at a friend's flat. He went to warm his hands by the wood-burning stove, but misjudged it quite badly and put both hands firmly down on searing hot metal. He recoiled and staggered back, shrieking, all the way across the room and out of an open window, into a narrow alley from the second floor. He fell, bouncing off the walls all the way down. It could have gone badly for him, but fortunately he landed on a canoe, which had been left at the bottom. And absolutely smashed it to shit. He walked away with nothing more than a few bruises and went back to apologise to the owner of the canoe the following morning. So all was well in the end. All the best, Neil. Neil, that's exactly what footballweekly@theguardian.com, the email address, is for. Thank you for your correspondence. And we accept any stories of falling out of windows with happy endings.
What are the odds? What are the odds?
And how soft is a canoe? Like, a canoe's not soft, is it?
No, they're made of fiberglass. They're quite...
Well, I suppose so.
Hard, I would say.
I mean, if somebody said, you're falling out of a second floor window, what do you want there to break your foot? I'd go mattress over canoe. Yeah. Anyway, Neil, thank you so much. And that'll do for today. Barry, thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
Simon, thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Philippe.
Thank you, Max.
We'll be back tomorrow.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.